Welcome to another episode of What Matters in North Carolina. As always, I'm your host, Matt Calder, and we're glad to have you on the show. So, this week, we'll be talking with Ray Notestein of the Civitas Institute. He's an editor over there, has a history behind him in journalism, and it'll kind of be two journalists talking about a proposal coming from a North Carolina legislator about gun violence restraining orders, or a restraining order that takes away a right to own firearms for a particular amount of time if someone takes out this gun, if a judge grants this gun violence restraining order against them. And there's a few states that have these, about eight have similar legislation to this, but this one would be seemingly pretty open-ended, and Ray and I will talk about that in this segment coming up. Without any further ado, we will get to our segment with Ray Note. Ray, thanks for coming back on the show.
Glad to be here, Matt.
So today, obviously, I mean, a lot of people probably aren't going to be surprised by what we're going to be talking about, but we are tangentially talking about the shooting in Florida, the school shooting, where I believe it was 17 people died. It was a 19-year-old who was attended the school and was kicked out for disciplinary reasons. If you've been through a school shooting or mass shooting with me, you know I don't say the name of the shooter. I never put him in the articles right. I write. I never say him on the radio. So the shooter will be how we refer to
him. Right. I think that's a good policy.
I think so. It's something I've done since my time at the UNO, and I don't like to glorify them in any way, because ultimately the part of the reason for doing these kinds of acts seems to be wanting this glory. So I don't do that. Anyway, so the shooting happened on Friday, and now, as happens following these, there's all these renewed talks of gun control legislation, whether it's banning, you know, AR-15s, or whether it's getting rid of bump fire stocks, you know, following the Las Vegas shooting, or whether it's high capacity magazines is what came out following Newtown. There seems to be a sector specifically that kind of gets attention, and one that's different in this one that's getting attention seems to be these in North Carolina is this gun violence restraining order. And we've got a legislator, a local Democrat in Durham, Marsha Murray. She was a judge on the bench. Now she's a legislator in the House, is looking at, or is going to file legislation for a gun violence restraining order, with the intention being that somebody could report someone to a judge who could then issue this gun violence restraining order. So tell us a little more about that, Ray.
Sure, a gun violence restraining order. I believe it's a law in about eight states. Texas and Indiana have kind of shells of the law that are pared down much more. But the two states that I looked at specifically were California and Washington. They were recent passages to some degree. And you know, the main thing is, and especially in California, it says that a family member or a police officer, if they suspect you of harming somebody, that the police can come and take your firearm. Washington's even broader, where it talks about coworkers, someone you know, extended family, grandparents, things like that. So there's an extension in some states where they define it out to a much more liberal degree of who can report you. But the intent is if you're suspected of harming somebody, whether yourself or other people, or perhaps you've made threats, that they can come and take your firearm away from you. And there is an element of due process, and people will debate the length of due process, because I think in California it's like 2 weeks you have to prove your case. In Washington, it's really 3 weeks. And I should say, really, in Washington, you have to prove your case more, because it's preponderance of the evidence, which is just 50 plus one. And people who are familiar with Title IX and sexual assault will understand preponderance of the evidence, which just means a majority of the evidence. And then, so the main thing is that the due process is really sketchy, because you have to, in some instances, go in and prove that you're not a threat, and you have to prove that to a judge.
And it's kind of, I mean, it's really hard to prove a negative in a lot of respects. I mean, proving you're not a threat, like, how do I prove I'm not a threat? Do I show up with a bunny rabbit and, like, pet the bunny rabbit and I'm nice to it? Like, how do you prove you're not a threat? But kind of, so there's a wide range, you're saying, of these laws that are currently in act. But we do have a little information, though we don't have a bill yet from Representative Murray. We do have some information about what she's thinking about, and in a in an NNO article on this, she says that under her proposal, anyone, such as a teacher, coworker, or acquaintance, who has firsthand knowledge of someone in possession of or with access to a firearm behaving in a threatening manner, could petition a district court judge for a gun violence restraining order. And that is a really, really wide topic. I mean, it's anyone who has firsthand knowledge of someone in possession of or with access to a firearm behaving in a threatening manner could petition a district court judge for gun violence restraining order. But let's kind of break that down. So she gives these examples of teacher, coworker, or acquaintance, but really it's anyone.
Yep.
And the who has firsthand knowledge of someone in possession of or with access to a firearm, that is anyone who could buy a firearm.
Right.
Could have access to a firearm. So long guns, anyone 18 or older. If you're 21 or older, you could have access to a handgun. So that's, again, essentially anyone could report anyone for behaving in a manner, a threatening manner, and they could petition a district court judge for one of these gun violence restraining orders. For you, and then it says, if granted, the judge would order law enforcement to temporarily remove any weapons, then schedule a hearing within 10 business days or 2 weeks to give the person and others an opportunity to discuss whether to bar the person from having firearms for a full year.
Right.
So they're going to take your guns right off the bat. It says that would order law enforcement to temporarily remove any weapons. They're going to come and take your guns right off the bat.
Yep.
Then within 10 business days, so within 2 weeks, you get a hearing to discuss whether or not you can't have guns for an entire year.
Right.
Over, at this point, words. This is someone with firsthand knowledge of someone behaving in a threatening manner.
Yeah, I think the problem with Marcia's proposal is simply this. I mean, she's probably the wrong person to be introducing this because she has said that she supports federal legislation to ban all AR-15s. She wants to, what she calls, ban military. You read the article too, Matt. She wants to ban military-style semi-automatic rifles, and that could be very widely interpreted. I mean, you could
that
be talking
is a
like,
very wide statement.
Yeah, I mean, you know, M1 Garands, M1 Carbines, all kinds of different caliber of weapons could be classified under
semi-automatic military guns.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's just too broad of interpretation. So to me, just kind of reading that article, she's clearly a gun grabber. She lives in Durham. So, you know, when I'm very skeptical when I look at somebody like that promoting that type of legislation. I think, you know, on the right, though, there's been some people supporting this. You had David French in the NRO last week, I think, came out with a piece saying, you know, all people on the right should be supporting this kind of legislation. He definitely narrows his definition in terms of, you know, how law enforcement could seize the weapon. So I think the intent by some of these people is to do well and promote the common good with this legislation. But I think the real, when you kind of boil this all down, the real problem is how will it be abused? I mean, will you have certain parts of the country, judge shopping, where they, you know, turn people in just so they can start the process of gun confiscation? Because, I mean, sadly, that's what we see a lot on the left is, you know, anybody who's kind of tuned in to social media has seen people on their social media accounts. You know, I saw one guy I knew lamenting that Obama didn't ban all guns or round up all guns while he was president, that, you know, that's the one thing he didn't like about Obama. So you have that sort of hyperbolic nature after a school shooting like this. And it's sad because we now live in a country that's so divided. You have one big kind of segment that says we need to take firearms from all people, and one segment that see it as a natural right, as the founders saw it, as an inherent right that's enshrined in our Constitution and the Bill of Rights. So, you know, there's just such a wide disparity now in America in how we view firearms. And it's unfortunate that it's come to that. I mean, it would be nice if there were some easy solutions to this, but I don't think pushing more gun control measures is going to have any sort of intended effect except for trampling on rights. And then for some on the extreme left to be encouraged about confiscating firearms.
Right. I mean, that's just true in that the Second Amendment is a constitutional right. It is the Second Amendment. I mean, it is right there. Following freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom to assemble. I mean, it is not this down the list thing. It is something that was given an obvious place of importance in our Constitution. it is not something to be tossed aside. Right. But you have this reactionary idea or statement from people who don't like guns or who themselves don't see the use in guns to throw them aside. They want that just thrown aside, thinking it's outdated and useless because in their life they haven't seen a need for it.
Right.
And a lot of these people who don't see the need for firearms, they've never been a victim of a violent attack. They've never had a home invasion. They've never had one of these situations that we see in the news every day where guns have saved lives. Guns have helped people. They don't have these. And they also, it's, if you think about the number of guns in America, you're never going to reach, like, you cannot get them all. And passing a law to get them all will only get the legal guns away. Now, and that's not going to work because there's so many people who already are breaking the laws and so many guns that are going to be brought in illegally, even if you're getting rid of the legally purchased ones, that you're going to have even bigger gun problems on your hands because you're not going to have anyone who's following the law able to have a gun to defend themselves.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, to me, it just boils down to, you know, anytime we have a mass shooting, and what happened in Florida is heartbreaking and tragic. I think, you know, one of the things that we discussed that before we came on air was just how badly the FBI bungled this case, local law enforcement. I mean, they had 26 calls or something to local law enforcement. FBI had a, you know, an important tip on YouTube that they were supposed to forward to the Miami FBI office and didn't. So, you know, there's a lot of what ifs. And, you know, you and I talked, too, about that tragic church shooting in Texas is the Air Force didn't file the right paperwork to stop the individual from getting that firearm that he had. So, you know, part of it is if the government's not doing their job, then what's to say the government's going to do the job the next time? And so that's a frustrating aspect. And I think, to me, just kind of an observer, someone who supports Second Amendment rights, but also an observer of what is occurring, what has been tragic is the way that some media outlets are using these children who are obviously in grief, but some of them are being sort of politically browbeaten a certain way into supporting a policy. And they may support that in their hearts, and that's okay, but just sort of the parade of this sort of grievance parade for taking away guns, I think, is ultimately unhelpful. And I think, Matt, what we really need to focus on is I think a lot of times why gun control is not successful and most Americans support Second Amendment rights is because they don't see that connection between a school shooting and then let's go after law-abiding citizens. Like you said, I mean, there's 300 million firearms in America. The vast majority, I mean, overwhelming majority of gun supporters and people who own firearms are not involved in any illegal activity. I mean, you don't hear about an NRA member shooting up anything. I mean, people that support firearms are, they're safety conscious. And I think when most Americans see that and realize that because they own firearms themselves, they don't make that connection to I'm a threat or you're a threat from something like a mass shooting as tragic as and heartbreaking as it is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely, so the vast majority of my peer group are firearms owners and none of them are, you know, they're all safe people.
Right.
If they weren't safe, then there'd be discussions with me about that. But I mean, it's just these, you know, it's not a firearm owner problem. It's not a problem of people who've gone through the current law and gone through the system,
sure,
got the firearm, used the firearm. Even if they have one gun or they have 30 guns or they have 100 guns, it's the vast majority of gun owners are following the law, being safe, and never would use those firearms for anything illegal.
Yep.
So to try and go in and say, we need to do this sweeping gun control measure or this one following such a horrible thing as this shooting. It doesn't connect. It doesn't connect when you think about the way you are and the way you think about your peer group is and the gun owners you know. It and the sheer amount of gun owners, it just doesn't connect. It doesn't mesh.
I think you're exactly right. And I think we're kind of focusing on AR-15s, but the vast majority of gun crimes are handguns. They're related to gang activity, especially urban violence. And you know, certainly there's rural violence in parts of America too. But particularly when we think of gun violence, sometimes we think of urban areas. And so I think AR-15s are maybe 2% of all gun fatalities, or maybe a little bit less. It might be 1.5%. I don't remember the exact statistic, but I think it's just under 2%. And when you look at it that way, as tragic as guns are, gun violence has become in parts of America, I mean, it's still trending downward. So that's what I think is sort of, you have to look beyond the media sensation a little bit, because these numbers of gun violence are still trending downwards. And calls for just sort of banning an AR-15, which is not a firearm I own. I've shot them before, but it's not one that I particularly, I gravitate to, but I don't have problems with people that do. But I think focusing on a specific weapon is really not very helpful in this instance.
Well, definitely. I mean, I think back on the Virginia Tech shooting in 2007, it was undertaken with multiple handguns. There was no AR-15 involved in this, and he killed 32 people, wounded another 17. It would shock people to know that an AR-15, the go-to weapon for these shootings, they would, in their mind at least, right, is not what was used. But the shooter was found mentally ill, and there was a hole in the state of Virginia law that allowed him to still purchase firearms. They since closed that hole. So that's a government problem. There is a government problem that lets someone who is mentally ill buy guns. And then I think back on Columbine happened when AR-15s were illegal. There were previously owned ones, right, could be grandfathered in if they were registered, but AR-15s were not legal when Columbine happened, and it still happened. And then I think back 2 days ago in Russia, there was just a shooting in a church. 5 people were killed. The attacker had a knife and a hunting rifle, killed 5 people. And, it's not the AR-15. I mean, and people will go, well, we have to get rid of AR-15s. Okay, well, what about mini-14s? Right. What about other semi-automatic? What about AK-47 variants? What about SCARs? What about ACRs?
Yeah,
AUGs?
Yeah, there's so many different weapons.
I mean, those are just military type, air quotes going on here, if you want to get into it. We're not even talking about just normal semi-automatic rifles that are hunting rifles.
Yeah.
We're not talking about shotguns at this point. We're not talking about handguns again. I mean, you can't put it on one gun.
Right.
For sure. Or maybe just semi-automatic guns. You can't put it on that. It's a lot of people who don't know about guns
I think that's part of it. I mean, like I said before, we got these two divergent cultures in America right now, and I don't know how we meld that together. I know David French in our piece, he was trying to argue that, this is something we can come together on, and his proposal was much more strictly worded than Marsha Morey's proposal. So, if you want to go read that, you can read that on National Review online, and people can make up their own mind on that. I don't begrudge someone for wanting to do something to stop shootings. I just don't feel like it will have any sort of effect, because there was already statutes in place to stop this shooter in Florida.
There was information.
Right. There was tons of information. So I'm not sure any more laws or legislation is going to do anything. I do agree with the premise of the article, which he kind of says that, government's failing in some areas in terms of protecting the common good when it comes to gun violence. So it is upon us. We've kind of lost this notion of self-government, right? Because anytime there's a tragedy, we want to run to the federal government to fix all the problems that we face today. And I think there is this, I agree with the premise of his article in saying that we need to have a greater sense of localism and watching out for violent people, being aware of our surroundings and understanding what's happening in our communities. So that aspect, I think, is very, very powerful in his piece. And I think that's something that we all have to do a better job of. But I think we've lost this notion in America, and it's sad in large pockets. I'm not blaming all Americans or all of America, or especially North Carolina, but we've lost this notion of self-government and virtue and what is required to sustain a republic through self-government, because, I mean, as soon as something bad happens when we run to the federal government, I think that's ultimately a failure on our part to really do anything. And I think people look to the federal government thinking it's going to solve a crisis like this, and it really has no answers, unfortunately.
Right. And we look at kind of the, you know, some of the issues that maybe contributed to some of these shootings. You talk about, or going back to the Virginia Tech shooting, it was a Virginia problem, a Virginia legal problem, to not have it so that someone who was named mentally ill couldn't buy a gun. That's a state problem. If people, you know, it, and that's, and how to handle those things as far as mentally ill people buying guns are state issues. Mm-hmm. They're not federal government issues. You can't just have the federal government step in for this exactly perfect. But the states are experiments. You know, they are made to be experiments. So I'd say let some states try some things out. Let some states see what works, what doesn't work. And, I mean, go from there. If you know, and I think that these gun violence restraining orders, as Representative Murray has put forward, mm-hmm. I think it's very open to abuse. Incredibly
open
to abuse.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I would completely agree
but
with you.
But there may be a way that that works on some level. I mean, let's say you have a restraining order, and this is part of it, and there's 10 days to have this hearing, but you don't have your firearms taken for those 10 days. Maybe it's innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
So maybe you have this restraining order, like, I have to stay away, or let's say it's situation specific. For this guy who's been threatening schools, you have to stay away from this school for this amount of time, and in 5 days or 10 days, within there, we'll have a hearing to see if we should take your guns away, or that sort of thing. And I don't know if it's perfect. I mean, I'm talking off the top of my head here, but
right.
It seems like with something as important as the Second Amendment, there should be reverence isn't the right word, but there should be a respect for the fact that is a constitutional amendment.
Right.
And we recognize amendments not as privileges given by the government, but as government recognizing God-given rights. And right. A God-given right to protection of yourself, your property, yeah. Your family, your liberty. We recognize the Second Amendment. People who are supporters of the Second Amendment recognize it as the ultimate, you know, giving language to this ultimate right to protect ourself and everything dear to us. And for I understand people who don't value the Second Amendment, they don't get that. But I would like to see policy that supports that, or at least recognizes that, for people who do believe in it.
Yeah, I agree completely. We have to have a high view of the Second Amendment. It's in the Bill of Rights. And we have to remember as a nation that, you know, government is instituted for the purpose of protecting our rights, protecting our property. And really, you know, the founders, their view on government was it was enacted to protect our inherent rights, right? Rights that were given to us by God. And that's how the founders recognized firearms and their rights to firearms, is that it was a God-given right. It predates the monarch. It predates the Constitution. And that's why they recognized it that way within the Bill of Rights, right? I mean, it's an inherent right. So we do have to be careful any time that we're going to put those rights in jeopardy. And I think there may be some things that we can do from a common sense level, but I think you have to do it in the sense of protecting those rights. So I don't necessarily have a problem with that sort of gun restraining order in theory. But right, like you said, when it comes to practicing the act, there's certainly elements for abuse to take place. And certainly if you maybe go before the wrong kind of judge or something like that, it would certainly be a problem. And it is a due process issue, even if it only takes 10 days to go before a hearing. Because, you know, when the founders talked about due process, they were talking about being tried by a jury of your peers. And, you know, that's part of our constitutional language, too. And so I think there is a problem maybe when you're going to a judge. It may be the wrong kind of judge. It may be an activist judge that doesn't want to give you back your firearms and may wield their power or usurp their power to trample upon your rights. And it's a big problem. But it's something I think to consider looking into this. I thought David French wrote a good piece. I think his intent is right, but I think that you know, there's too many inroads for abuse here.
I would agree there, and I mean, it's just the way we've seen judges act, the way we've seen what we've already seen in North Carolina recently in our judicial system would make me really not want those judges being in charge of whether or not I get to still have my Second Amendment rights. And Representative Murray says, and this isn't taking anyone's Second Amendment rights away. Go, you know, it is. If you take it for 10 days, or you take it for a year, or you take it for a second, mm-hmm. you've taken away the Second Amendment from somebody.
Right.
Possibly with zero evidence. I mean, if I see my neighbor yell at his wife, and I go, oh, that doesn't look too good.
Right.
And I say something to a district judge, and he goes, oh, he's yelling at his wife. And I go, yeah, he yelled at his wife. He goes,
yeah.
Well, let's be on the safe side. And this guy doesn't have his Second Amendment rights.
I saw him punching a board in the backyard or something.
Yeah, yeah. He was, you know, he was yelling around and kicked his dog.
Right.
I mean, it there has to be a really good reason. In North Carolina, we decided a felon shouldn't have a firearm. And I go, okay, cool. That guy's a felon.
I'm all for that.
That guy's a felon. Or if you've been convicted of a domestic violence crime, you don't get a firearm, cool.
Right.
But that guy has had due process, and this isn't.
Yeah.
I mean, this really isn't. But I want to jump to another point that you mentioned earlier, and that's putting kids on the front line of this gun control effort.
Right.
With Newtown, you saw the people using the face of these little beautiful first graders, and then now we're, you know, having teenagers who are being fed this rhetoric to push out, and it is sad. It is a low thing, and we're seeing it in other sectors as well. We're seeing it in the trying to get carbon or CO2 emissions to zero in the state here in North Carolina. We're seeing them using children as the front face of these different campaigns, and it seems opportunistic to me in a way to see it here, to see it in this tragedy.
Yeah, I think anytime you try to pass legislation in the wake of sort of tragic events or something happens, I mean, it should be well thought out. It should be debated for a long time. So there's this rush and there's this urgency. I think one of the kids, I saw a clip on CNN, like, you're either with us or you're against us. And, you know, I don't know what that means. Like, it's almost like saying we're more righteous than you. We're sanctimonious, and our point is more valid. And if you're against these measures or against what we want to do with gun control, then you're for school shootings, which is completely absurd.
Oh, yeah. And it's divisive. I mean, just because I support my right to have a firearm, I support the Second Amendment, I don't support school shootings. I don't support more dead kids.
Right.
That's preposterous. And we can disagree about the way to get to the end and still recognize that ultimately we're on the same side. And that language does not open that possibility.
No, you're exactly right. And I think one of the problems too is just sort of, there's so many variables that come into this school shooting, and you know, to blame it on firearms is just such a minuscule sort of component to this. I think it's a sensational aspect to chase after. I understand that with the school shooting or sort of a mass shooting of any sort, there's a sensationalization aspect to chase after. It's completely horrific. It's something that should not be tolerated in America, but you know, infringing upon rights is not the route to go.
Right, and if it's not a gun, it's going to be a knife or a bomb or some other agent if people really want to carry these attacks out. But anyway, thank you for coming on for this segment, and we hope to have you back soon.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
All right, thank you to you, the listeners, for coming on the show and again and being here with us. Thank you to Ray for being on the show. And if you're already subscribed, thank you for subscribing. If you're not, then go ahead and go to your whatever podcasting app you use on your phone or your tablet and search What Matters in North Carolina. And you can subscribe to the show and get it to your device automatically. If you are already subscribed but you're not following along on social media, go to Facebook and Twitter and search What Matters NC. Like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter to keep up with the show outside of just listening to the show and hearing from us. We'll catch you next time.